Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Innovator Insights. This is the podcast where we meet with successful entrepreneurs in the consumer product space and learn about their journeys, how they started with an idea and how they built it into a company that had an impact in the real world. And today we're super excited to have Bruce Rossner here. He is the founder and CEO of Green Life Tech Corporation that creates amazing technology that helps keep our produce fresh longer and reduces the waste of food. So without further ado, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, we're excited to learn more about your story. You and I had an opportunity to chat a little bit the other day, and it's incredible what you built. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? You have family, dogs. What do you do when you're not working?
Okay, well, that doesn't leave too much time. But probably my favorite pastime is fly fishing and gardening.
All right.
And with spring here, that's consuming a little bit of time right now. And I got to actually do a little fly fishing last week, so that was great too.
Nice.
So those are the things I enjoy doing. I'm married. I have two kids, and my wife has two by previous marriages. And we have seven grandchildren spread all over the world.
Wow.
And so that's kind of our personal life in a nutshell. My background, I was actually born in the Midwest, but I spent about 35 years in California in the high-tech arena where I started three high-tech companies. And probably the one most people would recognize in terms of technology, I developed the very first high-frequency RFID tags, passive tags, which are your long-distance tags that are used today by the billions.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I did not know that. So how let's go back to the early days of entrepreneurship. I think this is always interesting. Did you come from an entrepreneurial family? Or did you, that was something that came to you? Were you the first in your family to do this?
First in my family. Like I say, I raised in the Midwest, born in Ohio. So it was pretty much raised on a farm. So really starting a company was not something we ever grew up around, knew anything about. But when I got to California, I was involved in companies there. I realized that with my personality, I was better off starting a company than trying to work in a big company. I could make progress without people stumbling in my way. So that was the route I've taken for 40 years now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting. About half of the people I talk to come from entrepreneurial families, and it was sort of in their blood from day one. And then half are like you and me, where, you know, my parents probably couldn't even spell entrepreneur or know what it really meant. And I didn't really discover it or think about it much until I came to the US, you know. Great. So a couple of high-tech companies, and then how did you start Green Life? What was the initial thought or inspiration that started it?
It was kind of odd. I admit, like I say, I was in high tech electronics. I was actually doing for 2 or 3 years work in patent litigation as an expert witness in the RFID field and so on. And one day I needed a break. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm tired of seeing my family throw out wine. And I thought there's got to be a better way. So I looked into it and realized, you know, found out what's causing the wines to go bad. And came up with an idea. There are other technologies out there, mostly just replacing the gas in a wine bottle with inert gases. I said, I could come up with something better than that and more cost-effective and easier to use. And I think we did. And quickly realized that, hey, wine's a pretty good-sized market, but there's much bigger markets out there. And it turns out our technology is applicable to any organic material. Any organic you can think of is adversely affected by the presence of oxygen. So wow. We quickly transitioned. I did a proof of concept. I brought a team on board, guys I'd worked with in the past, people I'd worked with. And we started applying this to the fresh produce market, which turns out to be about $400 billion a year in losses in the U.S. and $2 trillion in losses worldwide.
Wow. And
there really is a genuine need for a technology like this.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let's go back to that original. So you're saying that what makes the wine go bad is oxygen. So when oxygen gets in the bottle, so if you just plug it again with a cork, oxygen's in there and it's not going to help, right? And you're saying the existing solutions are you somehow put in other some gas in the bottle. Is that right?
Yep. There were a number of, quote, solutions out there. It was interesting. One of them used pressurized gas. Another used partial vacuum. And the partial vacuum at least gave you a little bit of removal of some of the oxygen. The pressurized one, I never understood. All it was doing is introducing additional oxygen. So that was more hype than anything else. But there was a technique out there where they replaced the gas in the bottle with inert gas, argon or nitrogen. And in all honesty, it does work. Once you get rid of the oxygen, you displace the oxygen, the air, with the inert gas. So, I looked at that, but I thought, you know what? What I really want to do is if I had some way of taking the oxygen out of the air that's already in there. Mm-hmm. And I came up with this technique. It's a recirculating technique. And I won't go into all the technical details, but it's quite cost effective the way we came up with it. And we have patents that are now granted internationally on the technology. So we have a cost effective, chemical free, environmentally safe technology. We just take the oxygen and we remove these containers, whether it's in wine bottles or containers in which we're storing fruits and vegetables, such as a crisper drawer and so on. And we just take the oxygen out. And what's left is, for the most part, inert gases. Nitrogen.
That's amazing. And so you started with this insight, this technology that you developed. Did you actually launch a wine closer or preserver as a consumer product?
We did not launch a specific wine product. We still have that in our roadmap. But what we did launch was a unit we call, it's a countertop unit called Fresh Defend Home. And it's primarily for on countertops like a bread box, but it's a produce box for circulating the air, taking out. And with that, we built in an accessory unit, which allows you to plug into a bottle. Once you've opened it up, taken some wine out, you plug in there, you run it, it circulates the air, takes the oxygen out. You disconnect our unit from it. And now you have a wine bottle with a special cork, if you like, or insert, keeps the oxygen out and sealed until you use it again. So you can open it up again, pour some more wine out, and then recirculate the air, take the oxygen out, and it's, again, stored in an inert environment.
Yeah, that sounds like an invention would a lot of people, particularly restaurants, you would think would benefit greatly from it because... They serve wine by the glass and they want the rest of it to stay fresh, right?
It's a great market. As a matter of fact, without giving our competitors any credit, the one that uses gas replacement has a system for restaurants and it's very popular. I've talked to a restaurant here in town. He said it's his biggest profit maker.
Wow.
Because he can offer more wines, larger selection, and he can just seal the wine back up and so on. So it works. It's great system, but you have to continually replace it, the gas bottles, obviously. And with ours, we have the additional advantages that we can also clean the system because we add ozone as part of our process, both in the food and in the wine, to clean the lines out and so on. So you just run a little bit of ozone through there for a couple of minutes. You've killed off all the bacteria.
Wow. But then you said after the wine epiphany, it seems like you had another epiphany that there's a much bigger market, like you mentioned, with the grocery market. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, on your website, you have some amazing examples. You and I talked about avocados the other day. That's, you know, a constant pain that you buy beautiful avocados, but they're good for like a day and then they go bad. Can you talk a little bit about what level of improvement can you make, and how much longer do food last using this technology?
Yeah, if we get the fruits and vegetables fresh, and that's an if, like it depends on the entire food chain, if you like, we can extend the shelf life by 3 to 5 times. And those are numbers that come out of the USDA. They have it's called USDA Handbook 66, which I'm sure nobody's heard of, but it's been around for 40 years and been added to and so on. There's two means of extending the shelf life of produce. One, refrigeration, we all know about. The other is controlled atmosphere, removing the oxygen. And by the other numbers, you can extend the shelf life by 3 to 5 times. So if we get something fresh, we can typically extend it 3 to 5 times. One of the difficulties, and I don't want to lie to anybody, it is an issue. When you buy something at a grocery store, maybe it's used up 50, 70, 80, 90% of its lifespan already. So when we get it into the household, and I'm not going to take something that's already been 90% used up and extend it out 3x of its initial life shelf life. It just doesn't happen. I use the line, we build a preservation system, not a time machine. We can't go back in time and start over on this. So, but we can take whatever amount of lifetime is left in that fruit and vegetable and extend it out. So if we can get it early on, and that's why actually our system, we can use across the entire food chain from time of harvest to shipping, storage, grocery stores, and so on. But out of when you talk about $400 billion a year in losses, about half of that occurs in the home. The rest of it is spread across, like I say, from the time of harvest. You can imagine getting when you harvest something, if you don't get it into refrigeration right away or into a controlled atmosphere, it starts to deteriorate right away. Now you've got the shipping and storage time, and depending on the fruit and vegetable where it's coming from. In today's world, obviously, we get a lot of fruits and vegetables from overseas, taking weeks to get here.
Yeah.
So, and they refrigerate it in some cases, some they don't, our technology, by the way, works with refrigeration or at room temperature. It extends out either one. We work in conjunction with refrigeration. We don't try and replace it. So we can extend the shelf life out of any fruit or vegetable you can think of. You'd mentioned the other day, we talked about avocados. We've done tests on that. We have a program right now, an SBIR phase 2 with the EPA. In which we do testing and looking at extending shelf life out, basically replicating what the USDA did over the last 40 years and universities and so on. So again, we didn't create the idea that if you'll store something in an aerobic environment, that all of a sudden it'll extend its shelf life. Well known, well documented. We just have a cost-effective technique of doing it. Yep. In our case, what we've also done, like I said, we've added the ozone in because we find that once you start extending the shelf life out, you become susceptible to bacteria because it has a longer period to grow. If you throw something out after 10 days, normally, and we extend it out to 30 days, within that time, it has more of a chance to grow the bacteria. And we've had cases where by adding the ozone, we can extend it out significantly longer. Blueberries is one of our claims to fame. We have tests where we've done blueberries at 72 days. And when we stored them in an oxygen-deprived environment and used ozone to kill off the bacteria. When we didn't incorporate the ozone, the blueberries still lasted about 30 days. They're still edible and good, but they were starting to grow mold on them. But we add the ozone in, we kill off the bacteria, molds, and so on, extend it way out.
That's amazing. So your first consumer product, was it the Fresh Defend Home? The countertop storage for produce?
That's correct, and it isn't commercialized. We tried to raise money to commercialize it, get it out in the market and so on, but we found that's been rather difficult over the last couple of years. Hardware, especially consumer products, are really dirty words, we found out to investors. So we've taken a slight change in direction there. By that, I mean we went to OEMs, whether they're consumer refrigerator OEMs, to incorporate our technology into the CRISPR drawers, or we're also talking to small appliance manufacturers to work in commercializing our Fresh Defend Home, the countertop unit.
All right. That's great. How Well, a couple of thoughts there. One, you may want to try again, because I feel that there's a major shift going on in the investor community now with AI taking over the world. Nobody wants to invest in SaaS, you know, software as a service anymore, because they think that software's, you know, AI is going to eat it. So I've definitely seen a shift. And this is more anecdotally than I don't have any data to back it up, but it seems like there's a renewed interest in atoms, in real life products that, you know, AI is not going to take over anytime soon, right?
Yeah, we've seen that slight shift as well. I mean, I try and monitor as best I can. It's not my field of expertise, but we find the same thing. So we're looking as we go forward, especially as we start to work more and more with our OEM partners and so on, to bring in hopefully strategic money as well as your typical investor.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Great. And just to our listeners, would you be open to license your technology to other entrepreneurs that are creating, you know, if someone else has the funding or the idea of creating a consumer product in the home and kitchen space, for example? Yeah.
That's essentially what we're doing and talking to these people. Yeah, it's a licensing deal is what we're looking forward to and so on, yeah. And we have a very good IP position, as you might imagine, for something like this, we have to. I realized early on, based on my many years of experience in patents and so on, we had to have good patent protection or we'd get eaten alive. We looked at the market and we said, hey, we bring this out, we think it's gonna be, you know, the next $1 billion business here. And everybody's going to come in and try and copy it. So we have international patents that have been granted, and we filed more. They're pending at the present time. So we need that specifically, well, not for our own product development, but for licensing as well. So that's a very important aspect for us, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's make sure we share your contact information at the end of this to if people want to reach out. So does this technology scale too? I was just, when you were talking about food being transported. I know I live in Texas, for example, and what I learned is that 90% of our lettuce comes from California, right? So they harvest and then it sits for days in probably non-refrigerated trucks most of the time. And that, you know, obviously does not have a good impact on quality. Does it scale to, you know, truckload size? Or do you have to have some kind of specific airtight technology to support it?
It does have to be airtight. I won't lie to you about that. But we work at atmospheric pressure, so it's not like a vacuum system. We're going to be putting lots of pressure on here. We operate at atmospheric pressure. We have to be a sealed container, because once we remove the oxygen, if you don't have any leaks, there's no future oxygen being introduced until you open the container up again. Now, when you talk about scaling, I don't want to mislead you either in saying we've been approached about doing this for trucks, as an example. I'm not sure it's all that practical at the cavity size, but certainly compartmentalized. In other words, you take large containers in which you normally store food, as long as they're sealable, take the oxygen out, you can put them in a refrigerator, to non-refrigerated containers, and ship them and so on. And so that's basically been our target thus far. So yeah, it is scalable. So we do everything from 1 liter up to many, many liters. CRISPR, George, example is about 20 liters. Your larger cavities for shipping, for storage and so on, more than a 50 liter, but it's completely scalable in all these areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about CRISPR drawers, you mentioned this to me when we talked the other day that, you know, my initial reaction was like, oh, CRISPR drawers, that already exists, right? We have one in our refrigerator. But then I learned from you that most of those, that's really more marketing speak than anything else. They don't suck out the oxygen, obviously. So it's, you know, their effectiveness is very limited. Is that right?
It is. I don't want to downplay the refrigerator OEMs, but actually when we were approached by some of these, when we introduced our Fresh Defend Home, most of them already knew the benefits of removing oxygen. And a couple of them came out, which I was kind of surprised, and said they knew that CRISPR drawers are almost worthless. He said, but they've told us that we've put all this money into it. Everybody expects them, but most people use them as a storage You know, and we do too. We put packaged items in there, and I don't even think about it. It's another storage area for us. And so you don't get as much benefit out of them as they originally designed for. Some of the better ones, you know, they try and control the temperature accurately and the humidity, and you can improve your products in there. Leafy items, high humidity, others, fruits and so on at lower humidity and so on. So they do that, but it does, I mean, you might get 20-30% out of it. Something like that, I think, is about the best. With ours, we're talking about, you know, 3 and 4 times as much if you have fresh produce. So it's a big difference. And actually, one of the companies, I don't think I'm violating our NDA when I tell you this, they said that they've known about this for years, needing oxygen, and they've been approached by people, but nobody had a viable solution for taking the oxygen out. They had something that would work, but it was just not cost-effective, and it wasn't timely, taking hours, whereas we can take the oxygen out in a matter of minutes. So big difference.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you are in the competitive space of refrigerators and you want to have the high-end solution, it seems like a no-brainer. This would be a real differentiator for them.
We think so, and the discussions we've had, I think they feel the same way. They don't, obviously, they don't show their cards, but the fact is, one of them told us, he said, refrigerator is a terrible business. He said, yeah. It's so competitive. And you think about it, go down to your local Lowe's or appliance store, how many different refrigerators do you see in there, different manufacturers? And they all look alike, and they are all about the same price. I mean, really, it's a crowded area, not much margin in it. So we look at this as being a big differentiator, not just in the crisper drawer, but there's other aspects as well. We haven't been able to do the test yet, but we've seen studies on eggs. One of the biggest contributor to foodborne illnesses in the U.S. and worldwide, eggs. And yet they're porous as oxygen flows through, as well as bacterial growth. So we feel that we have a major advantage with our technology in that area as well.
So how do you approach that? Is that similar, separate drawer for the eggs that keep them separate and healthy?
Exactly.
Longer?
Yeah, and without going in, again, being too techie, we'd probably have slight changes in the characteristics of the oxygen and the ozone in that arena. But yeah, but it's a separate container and so on. But you'd probably be advantageous to put your eggs in a crisper drawer using our technology. It would certainly improve them, but I think we can improve them further with a separate egg tray, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. And then it's not just limited to food, right? You mentioned that you guys are into blood preservation too. Can you share a little more about that?
As I said early on, any organic, and it turns out blood, everybody knows blood bags by watching TV. These blood bags are porous to gases, intentionally made that way. So they're porous to oxygen, and oxygen is detrimental to red blood cells, whole blood, and so on. And again, studies have been done on this. We were approached about a year ago to look at this. And at the time, I said, I'd kind of downplayed it. I'm thinking, I got my plate full right now with food. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need to get into blood. And I'm thinking, oh, God, all the study or all the tests we'd have to go through, certifications with the government. But it turns out that we don't touch the blood directly. If you'll store a red blood cell or whole blood in the bags in an anaerobic environment, tests have already been done by the NIH and U.S. Army, you'll extend the shelf life out because you're pulling out the oxygen or not allowing oxygen to go into the red blood cells, which destroys them. So we're looking at that right now actively. Like I say, all the studies indicate that we can improve the shelf life and the quality of the blood by storing it in our anaerobic environment.
Yeah, and is the impact anywhere close to the produce impact? Is it like a 3x, 5x, or?
From what we can tell in the literature, they've gotten up to about 2x. We think we can do a little better. And again, without boring anybody with the text, it turns out that these bags, the material itself is already full of oxygen when you start. So we found that we could pre-treat the bags, pull the oxygen out. Then when you put the blood in, and put it back in an anaerobic environment so you don't allow oxygen into there, we've reduced the oxygen level into the bag by 96%.
Wow. And something you shared with me that I was, maybe I'm ignorant, but I was surprised to hear that, you know, all plastic bags are, you know, they're not airtight. They let oxygen in.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of our first tests with the EPA, we looked at produce bags. You know, we put your fruits and vegetables in at the store, and we take the oxygen out, and, you know, I measured it, and I'm down to between 1% and 2%. Next day I measured, I'm up at 15 or 17%. And I thought I was losing my mind. Then I started looking into it. Yeah, all these bags are porous. And you might think about when you buy potato chips, cookies, and so on, which bags keep the material freshest the longest? They're metal lined. That's how they block the oxygen going through.
Interesting. I mean, and the blood, I know that blood is in short supply, so it seems like, again, another no-brainer here that to start using this to extend the shelf life of it.
It's also very beneficial when you can store in something like this, because you can get it to the point of impact, so to speak. This is especially true in the military. If you can, for every 1 minute delay that you get blood to an accident victim or somebody that's been injured severely, it increases the mortality rate by 2% for every 1 minute. And that's why our Department of Defense maintains a large supply of blood at all times for in case of emergency, but they end up throwing out 94% of their blood.
Gosh, what a waste.
Yeah. Well, thank God they don't have to use it, but the bad news is they always have to have it there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, super exciting. Anything else? We covered produce, we covered blood. Do you have other things up your sleeve too?
I mean, we have a million and one things. Anything from spices, flowers, multi-billion dollar market suffers the same problem. And again, the USDA has done studies on it. You store them in an anaerobic environment, you'll extend the shelf life of your flowers out.
Interesting.
Coffee, teas, you name it. Like, say, anything you can think of, it's organic.
Yeah, makes sense. So tell us about what's in store here for 2026. What are you excited about? What do you expect to happen here in the next 12 months or so?
Well, we feel pretty good about working with our potential strategic partners in the commercial world. We're also in discussions with an organization that looks like they want to manufacture for us and develop it, the technology. And it's a very large, well-recognized international organization. So we're pretty excited about going forward. It's just that it seems like we've been on hold for the last couple of years. Because a lot of our financing came through government grants, non-dilutive funds and so on. And as most people know, they've been on hold for the most part for the last 8 months. They're just now opening up. So we see a lot of opportunities from everything from non-dilutive funding, investments, strategic partners, licensing, and so on. So we just have to push through.
Yeah. That's the challenging, I think, with B2B and particularly selling to bigger companies, right? It's super attractive, and once you get the deal, it's great. But also, the sales cycles are much longer. It's harder to sell in. A lot of decision makers.
I'm back in that big company mentality where I can't do things on my time scale. I have to do on their time scale.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you guys can find a way to bring your consumer product to market. I think that I want one right now.
So do we. We'd like to supply you with one or more.
Wonderful. As we're coming to an end here, you're a serial entrepreneur, you've done this many times. A lot of the folks that are listening are early stage entrepreneurs, first time entrepreneurs, or still aspiring entrepreneurs. Do you have any words of wisdom, anything that you can share with them?
I think there's one key word: persistence. It really is. I mean, there's lots of good ideas out there, and you just have to keep pushing. Say, example, when I did the RFID, we were turned down time after time after time, and most people said it couldn't be done because of the high frequency. And I kept saying it could be. We finally got the funding. It worked great. So even when they tell you no, be persistent.
Yeah, I think that's great. Thanks for sharing. And it's something I hear consistently too, perseverance and, you know, continuing to just drive forward. And you are going to get no's. You're going to get a majority of no's, you know. I've raised funding for 4 different companies, and, you know, it's probably 20, 30, 40 no's for every yes, right? And you just can't be discouraged. You have to keep moving.
Yeah. I mean, even right now, I think, you know, we look at the market, we have a proven concept, all this stuff, and we haven't been able to raise fund. We did a WeFunder for some funds, but for the most part, went out with venture capitalists and so on today. And I kept thinking, how can you possibly pass this up? So again, no, but that's all right. We know that we're going to get there. It's just a matter, you know, you just got to keep pushing. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. That's great. Well, Bruce, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time on your busy day to join me. And thanks for sharing your story. If people want to get hold of you, where can they find you?
It's B. Rosner, my initial last name, at greenlifetech.com.
And Rosner is Roesner. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I appreciate anybody who wants to reach out. More than happy to talk to them. And I want to thank you for taking time today, spending with me, and giving us this opportunity. I've really enjoyed it, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce. Best of luck in the rest of 2026. Take care.
Thank you. All right. Bye now.
All righty. This is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur, or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. Would love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your posts and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.